This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. Well, yesterday the federal government unveiled a massive aid package. The centerpiece is the new Canada Emergency Response Benefit, which will pay $2,000 a month for 4 months to workers affected by COVID-19. Now, to be eligible, you have to have earned a minimum of $5,000 in the last year. And this benefit will combine two that were announced last week. Now, last week, they directed one at people who do not qualify for employment insurance and the other to people who do. The thing is, in the first week or so, 10 days, there were 1 million employment insurance claims, and the system was hopelessly backed up. So this benefit will come through the Canada Revenue Agency. And I guess the question is, will that work better? Trudeau is saying people can apply through an online and telephone system, and they're aiming to have it ready by April the 6th. And once you apply, you can expect the money pretty quickly. Now, one of the ideas behind this is that employers don't have to officially sever people. All they have to do is to say they can't pay them at this time, and they can collect the benefits. So is that enough to keep businesses running? We'll get to your calls shortly. Now let's go to Pierre Poilievre, who is the Conservative MP for Carleton and the Conservative finance critic. Hi, Pierre.
Good to be with you.
So what do you make of this benefit?
Well, listen, the government had to do something revolutionary with respect to EI, because the system was not designed to process 1 million claims in a week. Normally, they get about 25 or 26,000 claims a week. This time they got 1 million, which is probably, I'm going to estimate, about 10 times bigger than the previous all-time record. So it would not have been possible to process EI for all of those people. Furthermore, there are a lot of self-employed people or gig economy workers who don't have EI. They don't pay into it and therefore can't draw out of it. They have lost 100% of their income through no fault of their own as a result of the corona crisis, and this benefit is designed to reach them as well. It's not that the terms of the program are not obviously sustainable for the long run, so the government will have to decide how long this benefit will be available. But for those who are immediately unemployed or who've lost income as a result of the corona crisis, it should provide them with some way to put food on the table in the interim.
Do you have confidence that the Canada Revenue Agency is going to be able to handle the volume of claims? The government has estimated that 4 million people are going to be thrown out of work because of this.
I can't answer that question. What I can say is that CRA does process well over 10 million tax filings a year. So, and they're able to produce all of the tax refunds based on those filings, usually within weeks or a couple of months. And your listeners will know from their own experience, usually they file and they get their refund within, 6 weeks max. So CRA does have the capacity to turn around checks and direct deposits on short notice. CRA administers the Canada Child Benefit payments that go to millions of families. I think around 3 million families get that benefit. So they do have the expertise and the capability to transact these payments. The question is whether or not the government, led by the cabinet, is competent enough to lead them to do that.
Well, if they have the systems and they've ordered them to do it, how does that play in?
Well, they do have the systems are there. We all know it. CRA is it's always the case that the tax collector is the most, the tax collection body is the most efficient department in any government, for obvious reasons, because that's how the government pays its bill. So CRA should be able to do this. Let's see if they pull it off. A lot of people are standing by waiting for that money so that they can pay their bills.
The other thing, as I look at this, so they're telling people it will take 1 or 2 days by e-transfer and up to 10 days by post. Do you have any concerns? I mean, right now the CRA offers direct deposit. I'm not aware that it offers e-transfer. And, you know, I'm wondering about a potential for fraud.
Sorry, your question is whether or not they can do e-transfer or direct deposit?
Well, no, I know they already do direct deposit.
Right.
I don't think they do e-transfer. And I'm wondering if e-transfers for that many people is secure.
Yeah, I would be very, very, very worried about that. The, you know, e-transfers are done through email.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if somebody's email is filed incorrectly or someone manages to call in and give the wrong give their own email for someone else's account, they might end up getting someone else's benefit. But you know, I don't know why they wouldn't just do direct deposit. That's what we do. We've done in the past. The child benefit is done through direct deposit. People get their tax refunds that way. Almost everyone has the ability to receive direct deposit. So I think that they my advice would be to stick with it. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Well, yeah, that's what I was looking at. That I was shocked because, again, the e-transfer with the amount of hacking and, you know, while we're in this, two of the biggest scams now, one is a CRA scam and several versions of that. And the other, there are now starting to pop up COVID-19 scams.
Exactly. There will be all manner of fraudsters out there trying to stuff their pockets. You know, as Macaulay wrote, wherever you fling the honey, there the flies gather. So you can imagine there will be many flies trying to raid the honey that the government is making available. That's just the reality, unfortunately, of the world. But we need to stand on guard against it. And the Canadians need to watch carefully to make sure they get the benefits they deserve, that none of them get bypassed.
What about business, especially small business? Yesterday, I was talking to representatives of the small business sector and also the manufacturing sector, and the mantra that they are repeating, saying they wanted direct wage subsidies. I gather that this has it's a different way of going about this, where they're saying you don't have to sever your employees. You can just say you can't pay them and we'll pay them for you. Is that enough to help businesses last through this?
Well, the benefit the government is providing is not a wage subsidy. It is income replacement. So it has no, there's no requirement for the employee to continue working in order to receive the benefit. And therefore, it doesn't in any way link to their job. So look, big businesses are going to get a bailout. It's clear the government has stated that, and households have received some money, but small businesses have effectively received nothing. There's a minuscule 10%, $1,375 per employee wage subsidy, which will mean nothing to the vast majority of small businesses. And they're telling CDC to try and lend out $5 billion in cash flow loans that I don't believe will ever get out the door. And the terms of these loans are really not very favorable. So effectively, small business is the sector that has been completely forgotten. And I think that I think this crisis will literally wipe the small business community right off the map. The other thing I worry about is that the government, the small and medium-sized businesses all go bankrupt. The government bails out the big guys, and the big guys use all the cash from the government to buy out the little guys. And that's what's going to happen in the oil sector. You mark my words. If they, you know, they obviously are going to come to the rescue of the large employers in the oil sector. But the small and medium-sized companies that do the service wells or have small rigs with 10 employees, or a couple, you know, five or six wells, they're all going to go bankrupt, and they're going to their assets are going to go on the auction block. The big companies are then going to use government bailout money to snap up those assets at huge discounts. So I think we're going to end up the way it's going. We risk ending up with our small business community completely wiped out, and all of their assets in the hands of big multinational publicly listed corporations.
Do you have a thought of what should be done to help small business and medium-sized business?
Yes. What they should do is refund all the GST that small businesses have collected in the last year. Just refund it to them. So if you're a small business, like, you know, I'll give you an example. I have a guy in my riding who owns a gym. They collected about $500,000 in revenue. So it's not a lot of money. They have five or six employees. If they were able to get back the GST they've collected, that'd be $25,000. That $25,000 will pay the rent. It will pay the utilities. It will pay the make the mortgage payment, and it will keep them going for keep them existing for another month or so, even if their doors are closed. But that would be the simplest and most efficient way to send businesses some money. And if the provinces were to do likewise and give back their portion of the HST, then it would be 12-13% of revenues, in which case that business I just described would get more like $60,000. So I think that is the simplest way to put cash back in the hands of small businesses. Let them get the cash that they collected for the government and keep that so that they can pay their bills until this crisis is over.
And has that been floated? Has there been any reaction to that idea?
Well, conservatives have put it forward. We pushed that with the government. We put a press release about a week ago asking for exactly that measure. And I'm going to reconvene the Finance Committee, which is empowered by a motion passed in the House this week, hold hearings and emergency hearings to get some small businesses in the room, and I'm going to put forward a motion for all the members of the Finance Committee to vote on to refund GST to all small businesses for the last year.
And how do you define a small business?
Any business that's eligible for the small business tax deduction, which means that they have less than $10 million of taxable capital.
Okay. A couple things before we let you go. Now, back to this business, about one of the things that businesses said is that when they were making their case for this wage subsidy, they said, we don't want to let our workers go because then it'll just take longer to tool up and to get back to speed. Now, it would seem that this measure might have that effect, because what they're saying is you don't have to let your people go for them to collect money. You just leave them, not on the payroll, but on the books, and the government will pay them for up to 4 months if you can't. So is there a value in that?
Yes. I'll give the government credit. I do think there is some value in it. It is simple, but it is not linked to the workplace. So If I work for a restaurant, for example, and I've lost my wage, the emergency benefit will come to me regardless of whether or not I go in and put in some hours at the restaurant.
Yeah.
So in other words, a lot of businesses will say it's going to be hard to get people to work because we're not actually paying them any wages. And I, to the workers' credit, I don't blame you. If you're not getting a wage, why would you want to work? It's not fair. If there is a flaw in it, is that there the idea Bill Morneau is claiming that this is a form of a wage subsidy is false. It's not a wage subsidy. It's an income replacement, a justifiable one, but it's not a wage subsidy.
Well, I'm sorry. I understood it's only for people who can't work, and that if you are working, your company will pay you. But
well, no.
It's also
what
murky.
The way the minister described it to us is that it is for people who've lost their income. So you can lose your income without losing your job. If your boss says, "Listen, I have to reduce, going to keep you on as an employee, but I'm reducing your hours to zero," then you lose your income, but you haven't lost your job. And those people, as you pointed out in your introduction, have not been severed, will be eligible for the benefit. The employer could then say, listen, would you like to come in and do some hours, you know, some maintenance work, some other stuff that can be done in the interim while there are no customers. And there's very precious little assistance for a business to do that. There's a small wage subsidy of 10%, but that's probably not enough for a business that's empty of whose account is emptied of cash in the last month to pay people anything to come in.
Okay, I have a final question, and it's because I've had a lot of questions from our listeners, many of whom are older, and this is people who are in their 70s, they're already collecting their CPP, in some cases their OAS, and they have part-time jobs to supplement their income, which they no longer have because of this. Are they eligible for this as well?
Well, according to the government's description, we don't have all the terms published, and there was no legislation with this, so I can't give you a firm, final legal answer. But the government's description of the benefit has been the following. If you earn more than $5,000 in the 12 months preceding your application, you are eligible. So if there are some asterisks and exceptions to that rule, then they have not said so, to my knowledge. So answer, shooting from the hip here, is that you should be eligible, but the government may attach some other conditions that I'm not aware of.
Okay. Pierre Poilievre, thanks so much. We'll probably be talking to you again. And I have to tell you, I already have a call waiting from somebody who says he thinks your HST idea makes a lot of sense.
Excellent. Well, we've got at least two people who agree on it now.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye. Now, also yesterday, the province announced a $17 billion aid package to fight COVID-19. Most of it dedicated to beefing up our healthcare system. There are also measures to help the most vulnerable among us, and that is elderly residents in long-term care. And with that, let's bring in Dr. Marilee Fullerton, Ontario's Minister of Long-Term Care. Dr. Fullerton, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Libby.
So, first of all, can you go through exactly what measures are being put in to help nursing homes? And we've already seen a few outbreaks in nursing homes, which, of course, are concerning.
Yes, extremely concerning. And, you know, we've been acting since the beginning of this to really, you know, build a iron fence around our long-term care homes and protect Ontarians in long-term care, the most vulnerable people of Ontario. And so, really, we started with active screening. We made sure that there were resources to provide the screening and really look at how we could contain and keep it out of long-term care homes. And so we've been working on that for the last few weeks. So Wednesday's announcement about the $17 billion in new supports, much of it going to healthcare in the $3.3 billion. But for long-term care specifically, there really are two groups of funding. One is first the containment and the response. And the second component is the emergency capacity. And we know that long-term care was at 99% capacity going into this. And same with our hospitals, in many cases, over 100% capacity. So there's $243 million that is going to be invested in long-term care, really to look at that capacity and the screening and infection control, staffing issues, and the supplies that they need. And so the containment and the response, there's about $25 million there. That is to make sure that we have the prevention, like I mentioned, the active screening, the supplies that are needed, and the operational costs associated with that, the additional staffing that's needed. And we have already flowed half of $50 million commitment to that, and that other half will be coming out shortly. We want to make sure that our homes are supported, that our staff are supported, so that our residents can be supported. And each home will be receiving about, right now, they've already received almost $40,000 right away, and another $37,500 will be coming in April. So the money is flowing. We understand the urgency of this, and we have been working since day one to put these measures in place. You know about the state of emergency that was declared in Ontario on March the 17th, and we have issued our own emergency orders so that our homes can be able to deal with some of the issues that are evolving. And I want to say this is unprecedented in the history of Ontario. Never in my life, in most of our lives, have we ever seen anything like this. So it's unprecedented. And also an additional $88.43 million really to help with staffing.
Okay, Dr. Fullerton, yes, I have a couple of questions, if you will allow me.
Yeah, please.
So we had a staffing shortage even before this happened.
Yeah.
We've also heard about support workers in long-term care getting sick. And, you know, given that this is a likely area where you can have an outbreak, you know, how are, if there's already a staffing shortage, you know, even with extra money, how do you propose to get the extra staff? And while I'm at it, the same for the supplies, there's a shortage of supplies. You know, we might have money to buy the supplies, but the supplies, finding them is a problem.
Mm-hmm. And certainly I've been on the phone constantly, pretty much, you know, 20 hours a day with homes, looking at the supply situation, looking at the staffing issue and understanding from their perspective. So hearing really from the front line, and those are really two important, absolutely critical areas that we are addressing through emergency orders. And I can just tell you that looking at the PPEs or personal protective equipment, we are working again round the clock to source more. We have worked with the federal government in terms of finding more supplies. We've got 12 million more gloves coming in, 1 million more N95s, and 6 million more surgical masks. And that's just the start. And in fact, we are retooling our manufacturing here in Ontario to address this, because as you know, there is a global competition for these supplies. And so our government working round the clock desperately to make sure that we can provide the supplies that are needed. So the numbers that I mentioned to you, the Minister of Health announced just a few days ago that these are on their way. And we're working with public health and what we call the command table that consists of Ontario Health, the public health, the Ministry of Health, and the deputy from long-term care and others to continually be addressing these concerns. So I want to assure all Ontarians that this is being worked on and that everyone is stepping up. So whether it's our manufacturers in Ontario, whether it's companies donating, just to make sure that we have the supplies that are needed. And my long-term care homes that I've been in touch with have been telling me that they have enough supply for now. But we understand the urgency of this situation.
What about finding staff? I mean, some staff are getting sick, staff are concerned. How is that going?
And obviously, this is a critical, urgent situation. And that's why we declared the emergency order that we did just a few days ago to give homes the flexibility to be able to have to move quickly to find staff. We have a whole setup, again, through the command table with public health, Ontario Health, and we're making sure that there are homes where they're having difficulties, that they are supported. The safety and well-being of our loved ones in long-term care and staff, so that is government's priority.
But where are you finding staff if there's a shortage? I mean...
Yeah. So, and that's what we've been urgently discussing with all our all the agencies that are representative agencies and the homes themselves. Really looking at how we can make sure that we can redeploy staff, that we can bring potentially retired nurses, retired PSWs, and some homes even have, you know, website buttons where their retired PSWs from those homes can come back, and they're getting uptake from that. Also, we look at other sectors that might be able to be trained quickly to be able to come into the long-term care homes and support. We need this pipeline. We recognize that. And we're pulling out all the stops to make sure that staffing...
Are you upping their pay?
That's something that, you know, we've looked at Loblaws, what Loblaws has done. Everything will be considered. Everything's on the table. The Premier has said he will do everything possible to protect residents and staff in long-term care homes. And as the Minister of Long-Term Care, I will do absolutely everything possible. You know, we're also recognizing the, you know, the capacity issues in long-term care as well as hospitals. So we're working with groups that have concepts of how we can move our patients out of hospital and into the spaces we have in long-term care, the ones that exist, but also how we expand capacity. And so, you know, I really pay tribute to everyone who's out there, whether it's retirement homes offering up capacity, whether it's long-term care homes saying, you know, we stopped our group day programs and we can accommodate 8 more people. But this is a coordinated effort through Ontario Health, the Ministry of Health, Public Health, our ministry, my deputy, everyone is working around the clock to make sure that everything possible can be done. And there's a time for talk is gone. There is no time for talk. We have a sense of urgency on this.
Glad to hear that.
Yes, we have an absolute sense of urgency.
Good.
And there's no time for planned political gains.
Okay. Thank you very much for that. And we'll probably be checking back with that. And good luck with that.
Thank you. Well, day and night, we're working on this. Thank you for your time, Libby.
Okay. Bye-bye. Thank you, Dr. Marilee Fullerton. Okay, I am going to take a call from Pat before we go to break. He's been waiting patiently to comment on what Pierre Poilievre had to say.
I thought his suggestion makes so much sense, and I'm saying the one with regard to refund of HST or GST, because they've got the numbers. There's going to be very little chance of fraud with that. I mean, all we have to do is look at what the federal government has done with their Phoenix payroll system, which has cost us something like $400-500 million because they didn't think it through. With government, you've got to keep it simple. And so I fully appreciate it. I think it's a brilliant idea that the man came up with.
Okay, you know what? It sounds pretty good to me, but I'm not an accountant. Pat, thank you for that comment, and I'm sure that Pierre Poilievre appreciated it as well.
Thank you.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.